But I wasn't in a running club at the time. I wasn't in a running community of any description, really. I was entirely on my own on this journey. And I think it felt like such a momentous transition from the 12 years of Prozac and an alcohol lifestyle before I had my daughter to, this person who was now kind of the shackles had come off and I'd found this strength I never ever knew I had.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Running Tales podcast. I'm Craig Lewis and that was the voice of this week's guest, Rachel Ann Cullen. Six times London marathoner and trail runner Rachel's story of transforming her life through running is told in the first of her three books, Running for My Life. Suffering from bipolar disorder and struggling to find her place in the world, Rachel found healing when she laced up her trainers. But her story didn't end there, and Rachel was keen to tell me how, while running does and did provide answers for her and for so many people, that it's not a panacea and that it can even bring its own challenges. It was a really fascinating story with Rachel, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. But just before we start, I wanted to take a moment to ask you all to take a little bit of time out to give us a review and a rating wherever you listen to the Running Tales podcast. Now, positive reviews mean the podcast gets seen by a wider audience, so the more we get, the more people get to listen to the inspiring stories of our guests like Rachel. Enough of that, though. Back to today's podcast and my conversation with Rachel Ann Cullen. I started off by asking her how running first came into her life.
The honest answer is that there was a really kind of a long, a very kind of prolonged kind of introduction to running for me, Craig. And I'll describe a little bit of that journey for you so you can get some kind of a grasp as to how long that was, because we're talking about years. So the first time that I kind of put my trainers on, I didn't really work connect the dots initially. But aged, yeah, it was around 17, 18. I had recently been dumped by a particularly unpleasant chap, and my self-esteem, self-worth was really, really low at that point. Physically, I was in pretty bad shape. Mentally, I was really no better. So I started doing a really very modest, let's say, sort of a jog walk from my mum's house during one summer that I was off university. And that started to have quite a dramatic and a profound effect physically, in the sense that my weight began to come off. I was heavy, quite heavy, reasonably heavy at the time. It's all subjective, of course, we know that. And just to be clear, I wasn't running at that point to lose weight, but my introduction to running wasn't some kind of a positive, I'm going to, kick ass and I'm going to set these goals for myself and this is going to be sort of my thing and we're on this journey and let's go and let's do it. It was a really kind of slow crawl away from that place of kind of feeling damaged. So that was when I was about 18. Running didn't really play a huge part in my life for the preceding years. I was into fitness in different ways. For example, I left my legal career in my mid-20s and decided to focus on training women specifically to become fitter and stronger. That wasn't in a running capacity. And I'd only ever done a couple of half marathons at that point. But we're leapfrogging ahead here to now we've gone completely past my 20s. We're in my 30s. And running reared its head in a big way when I was pregnant with my daughter. And that was in 2010. So throughout 2010, I hadn't run any marathons at that point. I hadn't been a member of a running club. I'd been out a couple of times with a group in Wakefield, actually, and that was whilst I was doing my lawyery thing over there. But it had never been a serious thing that kind of really gripped me and kind of shook me by the core and sort of grabbed hold of my entire being in the sense that it kind of did subsequently. So I guess to answer your question in a kind of a succinct a way as possible, it kind of took me from the age of 18 when I first put a pair of trainers on doing the jog walking thing to setting myself a goal to run the London Marathon when I was 33 would I have been at the time, 32. And that's when running really took a big hold. So it's obviously a long time, a long gap in between where running was a bit part in my life, but it wasn't a main focus for me.
But it's really interesting what you talk about there in terms of
just going out and running and it having an instant effect of improving things for you without these big goals. I mean, we're just into the new year. We're on a running podcast, so we all have crazy goals. We all want to run an ultra or a marathon or a 5K in our personal best. And actually, it's not always necessary to do that. Sometimes it's just helpful to lace your trainers up and head out the door and have a little run.
Yeah, and I think also it's important to be honest about our motivations for running and the way that it works. Sometimes it doesn't always come from a positive, this girl can type of a mindset. And although it can turn into that and it can transform, and often it does, I'd say the majority of the times it does turn into that positive, you know, when people finally do connect the dots and realise sort of the physical, the mind-body connection and where what running can offer and what running can give to them, then the positivity can shine through. But you know, for some people, and I was one of them, you know, it took me a long time to fall in love with running. You know, it did not, you know, it didn't happen overnight. It wasn't like, you know, eyes met across the bar and then, you know, love blossomed. It just wasn't that. It was kind of a limping along in some kind of awkward friendship, kind of nodding at each other across the street, and, you know, being kind of acquaintances. I'm using this as an analogy for, you know, myself and running. And then a long time later, it did turn into this, you know, this huge sense of sort of connection with running. And it did become, you know, a really, really big part of who I am and in my life.
I think that's really interesting, because just to borrow and continue and hopefully not push your analogy too far, but it's like running isn't really that partner that instantly spoils you with chocolate and flowers and all that sort of thing. It's hard and it's horrible and you have to go out in the rain and so on. And it's only later when you realise that this thing actually is maybe the best thing for you in the world.
Yeah, and also remember, and this analogy is going to be great, because if we can manage to stretch out for the entire interview, that'd be wonderful. But to be honest, you know, it's very possible in any healthy relationship you fall out sometimes. You know, you don't get along. There are times when you think, oh my God, you know, what am I doing this for? You know, what is this really? What am I doing it for? But then something. You go out, you put your trainers on, you come back in the door and you feel better. And there's a sense of calm and there's a sense of, okay, all right then. Yeah, that worked. There was something, I don't know what it is, I don't know why, but it's worked. And for some people, that connectivity can happen very, very quickly or a lot faster than it did with me. But, you know, the reality is that we're all on different journeys with running, and it can ebb and flow and it can change. I think that's a thing that a lot of runners miss, is the point that running can and does, and I would say should, change over the years and over your experience as a runner. You know, your goals will change, your motivations will change, as it did from me aged 18, kind of jog walking, seeing it was a kind of tiny bump. I wouldn't even describe it as an incline, and to me it was like Everest. I mean, you know, going from that to running in the hills in Font-Rémy, you know, where you're talking about some serious elevation, you know, things change. And I think it's important for runners to remember that and to embrace change along the running journey.
Yeah. And I promise I'm going to get back to your story in a minute, but just one more thought on that. And that's whether you think that those sort of experiences, good and bad with running, can be helpful for us all in our experiences of our other relationships in life, whether that's personal or at work or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, I do. And I think I've learned such a lot over the last kind of 12, 13 years of running. And, you know, really, some of the hardest lessons have been, you know, when perhaps running has become too all-encompassing. You know, it's tipped over into being an unhealthy addiction at certain points, and it's become kind of the outcome at certain points in my running past, the outcome and sort of, you know, Strava segments and race outcomes and positioning. You know, it did sort of eat me up and spit me out a little bit at one point, and, you know, that's something that I've had to work my way through and come to a level of peace with what that was. And I think that helps in other areas of life. You know, when things don't you know, nothing goes on a you know, consistent trajectory without, you know, blips and ups and downs. And I think to be fair to ourselves and learn how to work with our bodies and not kind of push ourselves to the point at which things start to feel wrong and things start to feel as though they're out of kilter. I've had to come back from that place, and thankfully I have. But yes, of course, it builds resilience and it helps you to deal with things that don't go right in other areas of your life. And it helps you to tune into the messages that your body is telling you and the ways that running's making you feel it. I believe it helps to kind of attune you to your own sense of what's right and what isn't at any given point. So it helps to train your intuition is probably what I'd say. And there were many times when I ignored that at my peril.
I think it's interesting, you know, that resilience that it builds, and it also means that those sort of times where you're 10 miles into a run, whatever it is, and everything gets hard, if you know you can get through that, you sort of start to feel you can get through everything. But I just want to rewind a little bit.
Yeah,
got you to your early 30s, and I think you're about to start on the stage where running really started to make a positive difference to your life. But before then, there were a few issues, weren't there, in terms of mental health and so on. Are you happy to go over some of those, and then how running helped?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so I guess the biggest thing for me during my 20s was a time when, you know, let's bear in mind, we're talking about the early noughties here. You know, the mental health conversation wasn't something that we had in the workplace. We didn't have mental health practitioners in the office. You know, it was a thing that was dealt with in a very clandestine, a very sort of let's keep things under wraps. And you know, there was a kind of stigma. Certainly in my experience, it felt to be something that I was unwilling to share with anybody who perhaps might have been in a position to support me, although I'm not sure that the support was necessarily available like it is now. So through my 20s, you know, I was in a career that wasn't conducive to my mental or physical well-being, actually, but predominantly my mental well-being. And as a result of that, I was kind of trapped in this lifestyle of, it felt like, you know, when you go against the grain, so you can either go with the grain or you can go against the grain. And the effort that it took for me to continue in that lifestyle for that length of time was incredibly challenging. And I was on mental health medication at the time. And in addition to that, I was actually drinking quite a lot, just in terms of, I guess you could describe it as, in some sense, self-medicating, or it was a thing that I relied on to, I guess, numb some of the difficulty of that chapter of my life. So you're talking about a 10, 12 year period where, you know, I wasn't in line with the lifestyle that I needed to be okay. I didn't have the support in place. I did have the mental health medication, which, you know, I believe, of course, I needed it at the time. But I've subsequently proven to myself that I don't actually need that medication to be okay. I can manage my own mental well-being. And I guess the big transition for me was motherhood, because I had to face the fact that I needed to come off that medication in order to carry my daughter. And that was a scary prospect for somebody who has been reliant on mental health medication combined with the alcohol for such a long period of time. It was a very frightening prospect. So out of nowhere, I had this kind of, it felt like an epiphany. It's not too strong a word. And I decided that I was going to run the London Marathon when my daughter was, she'd be 7 months old when I'd have to be on the start line for that. I applied for the ballot, and I've written about that in the first book. And I did, bizarrely, I know people apply 10 years in a row and don't get a place. Well, I did get a place in the London Marathon ballot the first time I applied, which is miraculous in itself. And so I had my daughter at the end of September 2010, and I made it my mission, really, to get myself in shape where I could physically and mentally, because let's not, this is a massive mental health story, it isn't all about the physical training, get myself in a position where I could run the marathon 7 months later.
And I think you've gone on to not only run that marathon, but a fair few more, including London 6 times. Is that right?
Yes, I've done. Yeah, I did. I kind of got hooked. I mean, the journey was so arduous, and that's six. Yeah, take away the first 4 weeks after I had my daughter, because there's various bits of healing that needed to take place. So in effect, I had 6 months to get marathon ready. You know yourself, Craig. You go through such a journey during that period of training. Everybody has their own story here, and mine is one of millions of marathon running stories. That first ever marathon, but something got into my bones. Something I think because it was so hard, and because my body had only just started to recover from the pregnancy, and because it was something that felt like such a it was such a big goal for me, and not just in terms of the running 26.2 miles, but in terms of, am I mentally strong enough to do this? Can I get up on the wet January, February, miserable, rainy, sleeting, hail blowing sideways? We lived on a hillside in Yorkshire. It's not nice when the weather's like that. Can I continue to do this? Can I stick to the goal that I set myself? And I was by myself in that sense. I had a partner at the time who was supportive but didn't really understand the whole journey I was on or why I chose to put myself on that journey. But I wasn't in a running club at the time. I wasn't in a running community of any description, really. I was entirely on my own on this journey. And I think it felt like such a momentous transition from the 12 years of Prozac and an alcohol lifestyle before I had my daughter to this kind of, you know, this person who was now kind of, the shackles had come off and I'd found this strength I never ever knew I had. And I think something just buried itself deep in my bones at that point. And so I did go back again in 2012. I did try hard to get a good for age place, and I subsequently ended up getting 5 good for age places and ran a few other marathons. Did Boston Marathon 2018 and Dubai Marathon 2016. So the marathon bug really did hit me, and I had a great time, you know, and I improved, and you know, my running got faster, and then it tipped over the edge and became unhealthy, and that's another chapter. But yeah, that kicked me off into this trajectory of kind of 10 years of marathon running that I could never have imagined or foreseen prior to that.
And is it fair to say, tell me if I'm going a little bit too far with it really, but I guess as you would have crossed the line on at the end of that 26.2 miles, did you just feel like I'm a new and completely different person now?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that's surely how everybody, I would imagine, that's how everybody must or does feel when you set yourself a goal like that, and you prove to yourself that, you know, over the difficult training runs or over the races where you've crossed the line in tears. I mean, there was a half marathon on the way to that very first London marathon, and my hip flexors, remember, in the pregnancy, I mean, they were still so weak, they were on fire. And I remember crossing this half marathon, it was in Blackpool, I think, in February. And they hurt so much. I was just in floods of tears thinking, I literally can't do this distance again. I literally cannot do this distance again. But you dust yourself down. You somehow move past that obstacle. You somehow recalibrate. You remind yourself why you're doing it. And you do. And it's incredible how that happens. It's unbelievable how the challenges that you set yourself, the incremental sort of increases in the distance or in the difficulty of the obstacles in your way. I'm not even sure how it works, that you can, you know, you overcome one and you believe that that's just about your limit, and then you realize it isn't.
Yeah.
And then you realize, oh, hang on a minute, okay, so I can no longer accept then that this is the absolute, that this is the most that I can do. I have to now take in the evidence that shows me that I am capable of more than my head will tell me that I'm capable of, because I've seen it, I've proven it. And I think you take that with you, and that follows you around in the rest of your life. You know, you take that into social situations where you feel brave, you take it into job interviews where you feel like, oh my God, you know, is this something I can, you know, can I really seriously apply for this role, or can I write a book, or can I be brave and talk about this issue in front of other people? Yes, I can, because I've proven that when I need to face that obstacle, I can meet the challenge, even if it scares me to death, even if it feels like it's just above the ceiling that I've set for myself. And I think that's really what I took into my future life and into motherhood as well, because remember, I'd been so absorbed in my own mental health woes and the lifestyle that I had before, which outwardly appeared to be successful, but we know it was crumbling from the inside. And I think to actually take that strength from a girl like the London Marathon and funnel it into motherhood and being able to actually feel as though you are able to be responsible, and not only responsible for another little life, but actually you're strong enough to steer that responsibility somewhere. You're able to do something with it far more than you ever believed that you could. And I think for someone like me who had never even considered that they would have a child or be in any position to be a parent, the strength of that one goal kind of transported itself into my role as a mum. And that was probably the biggest direct impact over and above, you know, the marathon itself. And we know it physically, it gets you strong, and you know, you run a marathon, you've got to get in certain physical shape, and mentally I was in a much better place. But in terms of being a mum, it really enabled me to believe that I could do that, whereas perhaps I'd never quite believed that I could.
Well, that's really important. I mean, obviously covering that sort of distance and doing that achievement, it's wonderful. But if you can turn it into something that has an impact on your family life in such a positive way, then that's just a fantastic story. Which brings me nicely on to the fact that it did become a story, and you wrote the book all about what you'd done. What made you think, I'm going to write this story, other people need to hear about this?
Yeah, it's funny. It wasn't so much that I felt as though other people needed to hear about it. I'll tell you where I was when I actually decided I was going to write the book. I was in the bath before the 2015 London Marathon, and the October before, so we're talking about April 2015, the October 2014, I'd run the fastest marathon I'd ever run, and I'd come in the top 20 females in the Yorkshire Marathon. I'd got a time of 3 hours 16. So I'd taken an hour and 10 minutes off my marathon time in the space of 3 years, and people were starting to kind of presume that I found it easy, and people were starting to make judgments that it was somehow easier for me to run a marathon than the next person, or it was something that, oh, you look like a runner, or oh, it'll be easy for you because you've done it before, or you've run marathons before. And actually it began to dawn on me that I wonder what people would think if they really knew the journey.
Was there a worry that people assuming you were just naturally successful might put off people like you from 3 or 4 years ago from doing it?
I think there was just something about, it's just not honest. It's just not the truth. And I think it's kind of, you know, when you look at somebody who's, you know, on the start line of a race, or who's in the hub, or who's in the pen with you, and you make judgments about them, the truth is perhaps none of us really know their story, and perhaps they, you know, they may look a certain way. You know, there's physical judgments, you know, I look like a runner. What does that mean? You know, yes, I'm tall, I've got a certain body shape, but that's not always been the case. I got myself to a certain level of kind of marathon running achievement, if you want to put it like that, but that was not always the case. There was a time at which, you know, at which I couldn't run for 10 minutes on a treadmill. I was seriously unfit. And I think it was something about just opening people's minds to the possibility that there are very different backstories than the kind of, you know, she looks like that, so she must find it easy, therefore there's no way I could do that because you know what I mean? And I kind of wanted to, I guess, open up the conversation in a way that connected. I felt like I can't be the only person who's had this kind of running epiphany. I cannot be the only person who has experienced this level of change and transformation in a mental sense, in a, you know, it was all encompassing. And I think it was my kind of attempt at just reaching out and sharing the story, because there must be other people who've experienced something similar, or who've kind of had the epiphany, or who are on that journey, or who may read about my childhood and you know, the difficulties, and parts of that may relate. So I think it was kind of on a few different, there were a few different reasons for me wanting to write the story. And I think, yeah, it was about the honesty of that, of the journey I'd been on, rather than this kind of presumption of, you know, oh, this is who she is, and this is what she can do, because it's just da 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 da, fill in the blanks, and about connection as well. I think it was about connectivity.
And so the book was called Running for My Life, but the books didn't end there, did they? After that, I think that turned out to be something of a success, and you've gone on and written a few more.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I think I was a bit naive at the time, Craig. I think I imagined that my running would just continue on that trajectory. I'd carry on running marathons, and you know, this is who I am now. And that's why at the start of the conversation, I was talking about the need to embrace change and to understand the body needs different stimulus as well. It can't just do the same thing over and over again. And then, you know, my story didn't end there. I had to go through some really difficult times when my body didn't want to run at that level anymore. It didn't want the pressure. It started to be sort of associated in my mind with real anxiety, actually. And I started to, everything became heavier, and I really lost that love of running and that joy that I'd had for the sort of that 8-year period. And it started to really, really fall away and crumble. So I had to kind of find a way through that, and other mental health issues that had sort of remained dormant throughout that time, they popped up. It was a bit like whack-a-mole. So the running stopped, and then, you know, body dysmorphia flared up, which I'd managed to kind of just subdue for the period of time. So, you know, I had more learning to do. You know, my story didn't end there, and I didn't run off into the sunset. Everything was perfect, and I'd found running, and it solved all my problems. And that's not the truth. The truth is, I needed some professional help with body dysmorphia, which is a serious mental health condition that I was still suffering from. Running couldn't be the sticking plaster over that. I couldn't run through all of my other problems and issues in life. And it was unfair, actually, to put that pressure on running. Why should running be the answer to every problem, from, you know, bipolar disorder to body dysmorphia to life stresses to grief to all those things? How can running possibly bear the weight of that pressure? And that was a lesson that I had to learn. So, I mean, I started riding a bike, and I rode across Costa Rica, and that was a part of the journey I shared in my second book. And it's actually not about riding a bike. It's actually about the impact of mental health breakdown on the back of my losing the one thing that I believed propped me up. And there was too much reliance on running for that, as I've just said. And then if we're jumping into 2022, throughout this 5-year period, many people have contacted me and shared parts of the story with me. It did reach out to people, and people felt able to connect with me in some way, in really bizarre ways, you know, whether we'd had a similar childhood or whether our teenage years were spent kind of at the vending machine and avoiding doing PE, you know, and all of the, so many of these stories really impacted on me, and I wanted to share those, because why should it be that my story's out there, but I'm hearing all of these other incredible running stories of people who are, you'd run past them on the street, you'd see them at park run, you'd see them at a race, you'd run next to them at a marathon, and you don't hear their stories anywhere. And that's why I kind of really set out to write their stories in the book that came out last year, so that it's kind of, it's come full circle, it feels to me.
Yeah, definitely. And that's certainly something that, you know, we understand, Michelle and I, from doing this podcast. It's exactly trying to do that thing that there's people out there, whoever you're running next to, they've normally got this most extraordinary story. And that, although we hear about so much, quite rightly, about the Eliud Kipchoges or whoever else, normally the person jogging alongside you at park, for whatever reason, has an even more amazing story.
Yeah. And this is what, you know, I really found an unbelievable, an incredible selection of you know, these stories that I'd heard, and I didn't have to struggle to get hold of them. You know, some people had contacted me anywhere, you know, years before. It just so happened that we had the most brilliant collection of stories and individuals who'd overcome so many different things. And each of those stories and each of those individuals really, really touched me deeply. And, you know, it really was my kind of pleasure to actually put their stories in a book so that other people can read about their experiences, and, you know, they can be proud that they chose to share what they'd gone through and how running had helped them in many different ways, from running ultras, you know, to, you know, everybody's got their kind of their own gauge in terms of their own sense of, you know, this drives me, this is what I want to, this is what running means to me. So we're not interested in times and PBs and things in the book. It's much more about, you know, how running helped people in various different challenging life circumstances, whether that's grief at the loss of a child or a cancer diagnosis, or simply, you know, everyday stresses. You know, it doesn't have to be a headline story. You know, people can have incredible, incredible experiences of overcoming challenges just with everyday life. You don't need the headline of, you know, it doesn't have to be a big event. It can just simply be, actually, it just helped me to be okay when otherwise I wouldn't have been okay.
And if people are feeling, listening to this, that your story resonates with them, that they'd like to hear the other stories of people doing these sort of incredible runs and so on, where can they go to get the books?
Yeah, so the books, they're all on Amazon. So all three of them are under my name. So it wouldn't be difficult to have a look on Amazon. It's probably the best place to have a look. And then you can see there's my story in the first book, When Everything Fell Apart. That's the second book, Forget About the Cycling. And then Running for Our Lives, which is kind of a twisted the Running for My Life, because it was no longer about my life. There are little bits about my story threaded throughout, just to show the connection between the people that I kind of met through that journey. But yeah, Running for Our Lives, and that's the one that does document all of those. I think there are 17 different stories in there, men, women, all different ages, even running with dogs. It covers it covers everything. So the easiest place is probably, yeah, Rachel Ankle, and have a look on Amazon, and you should find it there.
Oh, fantastic. Well, we'll see if we can stick some links for you on the, you know, the bit of gumph that comes at the start of the podcast. I'm sure that's got a proper name, but I can't think of it properly.
Yeah, right. That works for me. Gumph works.
Yeah. In the middle of my confusion, it's probably a good time for us to bring this to a conclusion today. Thank you so much for joining us, Rachel. It's really appreciated. And if people want to go and get the books, have a look on Amazon. Thanks so much.
Yes, my pleasure. Thanks, Greg. Enjoy talking to you.